Welcome back to the Root Cause Medicine Podcast. I'm your host for today, Dr. Kate Kresge, and we're talking about athletic performance today. Now, most times when we think about optimizing athletic performance, the conversation centers around elite professionals, Olympic athletes, or fit adults who are looking to stay on their own leading edge. But what about the teenagers? The teenage years are ones filled with incredible physical growth, neurological development, and identity formation. Yet they're also a time when young athletes are navigating increased training demands, mounting pressure, and often not enough nutrition or recovery. Today's guest believes we can do better. Dr. Eric Peterson is an emergency medicine physician who spent more than two decades on the front lines of acute care. But alongside his work in the ER, he's built a functional medicine practice focused on performance, longevity, and helping athletes reach their potential from the inside out. As a former college athlete and now a physician who works closely with young competitors, he's developed an approach that goes far beyond what we think of as sports performance. And it's really about building resilient, healthy humans. In the conversation with him, we'll explore what adolescent athletes really need to thrive, why nutrition, sleep, and recovery, as well as metabolic health, deserve as much attention as training itself, and how parents, coaches, and practitioners can better support young athletes during one of the most important windows of development. We also talk about Dr. Peterson's own journey, from working overnight ER shifts while raising a young family, to creating a practice that reflects the kind of medicine he always wanted to practice. It's a conversation about performance, yes, but also about purpose, prevention, and what it really means to care for the whole person. If you're a clinician working with active patients, parent of a young athlete, or simply interested in what high-performance medicine can teach us about lifelong health, I think you'll get a lot out of this episode. Let's jump in. Before we get started, though, I've got a special question for the practitioners in the audience. Practitioners, what if your supplement dispensing, patient education, and treatment planning all lived in one powerful platform built for whole person care? And what if that platform was free for both you and your patients while saving you hours each week on treatment planning and follow-up? Well, meet FullScript, the comprehensive care delivery platform designed to reduce administrative burden and enhance clinical impact. From automated refills and lab ordering with interpretation to evidence-based protocols and built-in adherence support, FullScript integrates the tools you need to streamline care and stay focused on what matters most, your patients. In a recent survey, 74% of providers reported saving up to 3 hours per week using FullScript to create their treatment plans. Are you ready to work smarter and elevate your practice? Visit FullScript.com to get started today. Dr. Eric Peterson, welcome to the Root Cause Medicine Podcast.
Oh, Kate, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. So we were connected because I was introduced to you as someone who is doing really incredible things in the space of athletic performance, particularly with a group we don't talk about very much on the podcast, our teenage athletes. And I am stoked to talk to you about your protocol and your approach. But like before we get there, I want to hear a little bit about who you are, because when I met you, I learned that you're still working shifts in the ER. You've been an ER doc forever, but you've also got this really cool functional medicine and performance clinic that you're running. And so I would just love to hear a little bit about you and how you got to where you are today.
You know, long story, really. I went to medical school in Kansas City, ended up in a residency at Texas A&M. I did med peds, trained, and had two kids while I was in residency making, I don't know, mid $20,000 range. So while I was in residency with two kids and a wife, I had to do something. So we could moonlight at the time in small town emergency departments. So starting in my second year, I started doing emergency medicine while I was at Texas A&M and was working all night in the ER, coming back, doing my morning report and rounds, then going back and working all night into the ER to try to make ends meet. Given all of that, I still loved it. And my thought was, I loved the schedule. There were none of these, you know, 16-hour days like we were doing in residency. It was pretty much a defined, you come in the morning and you get off at a certain time. And then knowing that I had interest in coaching my kids and different things like that, the shift work turned out to be great. So when I finished my med peds residency, we moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, and that's where I started in 2002 doing emergency medicine. Loved it. I still love it. Almost, gosh, makes me seem old, but 25 years later, I'm doing that. But along the way, I have had other thoughts and ideas and kind of did different things. I became a leader in emergency medicine, and that primarily started as my kids got older and I didn't want to miss anything. And I didn't know anything really about being an emergency medicine leader, but what I did know is I got to create my own schedule. So that's how that piece started, and that worked like a charm. So I guess 4 years after I had been in practice, I was a medical director, an assistant medical director, then became medical director in 2008 and had all the time in the world to never miss my kids' stuff. So fast forward now 25 years, they're all out of the house. I can still make my own schedule. I still love the work. I don't necessarily like the direction that medicine is going. So my partner, who's also an ER doc, and I have started this functional medicine practice, which is, you know, that's a practice philosophy in general. We have clinical focus areas that we deal with, which is performance medicine being probably one of our favorites, men's health, women's health, all of that. So we just have a wide range of things that we are into.
Yeah. Well, what struck me about your story as well, and made me kind of not surprised to see that you ended up where you are today, is that you were an athlete in college. And so you're someone who athletic performance is important to personally on a number of levels.
Yeah, so for sure. I mean, and as I look back on it today fondly, you know, we still keep in touch with, you know, we probably have 30 of my former teammates from 1987 to 91 on a text thread that's active every week. Literally every week we're talking about something. And none of them remember now what I remember is our nutrition was a peanut butter sandwich before the game in a packed bag. There was nothing back then like what there is today. And I think that's kind of the, you know, where college athletics has gone. I played at Northwest Missouri State, was one of the first All-Americans there, was three-time first-team All-Conference there, and have rubbed that in my kids' face for years. Then was elected Hall of Fame a year ago or 2 years ago, something like that, after many years of waiting, which was cool. So I, you know, remember all of that stuff. And as we develop this, especially this performance medicine now, the whole concept of how I got myself enough calories was, I don't even know how we did it. We just didn't have anything available back then. So that's kind of where this all starts.
So you played football. What position did you play?
I was a defensive end.
Okay.
So in the era of the wishbone and veer offense, so they didn't really pass much. It was primarily a run-oriented offense. So my real claim to fame, I told you the accolades, but my real claim to fame is I held the career sack record at my school for over 15 years.
So wow.
Kind of a cool thing.
That is really cool. Okay, so then I would imagine what was important to you was like strength, speed. Your size also had to matter a bit when you're getting by those O-line guys to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
And so, but it sounds like you were just given a PBJ sandwich and pushed out on the field. And I'm wondering, it sounds like you do a lot more for your athletes these days than just that. So why don't we get into how you think through performance and what's required for good performance? I mean, we can talk about food, which I think your understanding of it is a little beyond a PBJ sandwich.
Sure.
But like, what are you using to help your athletes? Is it supplements? Is it prescription? Where do you start?
Well, I think the first place that you start is understanding adolescence, right? Raising four kids helped with that. Being around sports and coaching youth sports forever, you're trying to encourage these kids along and fight through. And then you find out, well, what did you eat today? And it's like, nothing. So yep. All of these kids whether they're an athlete or not, you have to understand that they're in a calorie deficit to begin with. So we're asking them, or coaches are asking them, strength coaches are asking them to build muscle, get bigger, get faster, get stronger, and they don't have the raw materials that they need to do it. So I think, you know, when people will often say, well, what is the supplement stack that you used to be successful in this? And it's really not a supplement stack. And the supplement piece of that, meaning protein powder and creatine and casein and omegas and all of that, are probably 10%, 10 or 15% of what we do. And each kid is completely different with how that is managed. For instance, somebody might be a linebacker that's 180 pounds and they want to be 200 pounds and they're skinny. So that whole process is different. What they eat, what their diet needs to be, how they need to space out all of their supplements and that kind of thing. But there's just as many kids that are 270 pounds that want to stay 270 pounds, but they want to lose body fat and gain lean muscle mass. So that's a different nutritional program. So the point is, calories are number one. Consistency is number two. So you have to get your calories. You have to be consistent about your calories. And then you work on supplements. And really, the supplement piece of that is exactly the same. So our big focus here, and I think performance medicine for sure, is you have to give the athlete the concept of nothing works unless you do it. And our job is to make them do it in a way that they understand. So if you tell them you got to get all of your calories in this shake at night before you go to bed, we know they're not going to do it. But if we spread out and have 2-3 smaller shakes during the day, they'll do it. That also helps with the absorption of protein and how the body utilizes protein and doesn't waste it. And, you know, there's a lot of those concepts that go into it. You know, we could spend 2 hours alone just talking about what protein we use, why we use that particular protein, why we use certain brands, and why certain brands are favorable to kids, et cetera. And there's really a lot that goes into it. And we have to know that adolescence is probably the greatest opportunity there is in medicine right now. They're truly an underserved population in just about every aspect. That performance medicine certainly is one of those. They're largely ignored by pediatricians because they're never sick. They don't need to go. So, you know, there's maybe an occasional vaccination that they get or something along those lines. But in large part, they're now allowed to search the internet, figure out what other people are doing in ways that may not be above board. So we try to rein in all of that and have time to do education with all of these kids.
Well, I think that's really, it's so important what you just said about adolescents being underserved. And I think you're right. And I think especially in the era of peptides, this becomes a really important conversation to have with our teens, whether they're our teens personally or teens in our practice, knowing that if we're not doing the educating, and if we're not doing the guiding and we're not doing the curation of what they take, they will probably be looking at their friends and be looking online and ordering things that might actually end up being dangerous or unnecessary for them. And so before we get into like your natural protocol, and I want to talk about the moment with your son and his two friends that kind of made you realize like, we need to protocolize this. We need a program around this. Before we dive into that, I do want to know, like, I think it's good to start out. Like, what happens when a kid comes to you and says they do want to be on peptides? Like, is that part of your conversation or what's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, that's, as you alluded to, that's a real life story that just happened here a few months ago. A patient of mine in our direct primary care clinic came to me and said, hey, my two boys are interested in peptides. Can we get on a call and talk through it and figure out what's best for them? And without telling her anything, I said, absolutely, let's get on a call as soon as possible. Because in today's world, what happens is if they're thinking about it, it is one click away from being a reality, right?
Yep. So
we got on a call. And basically the first thing that I told them after they told me what they were interested in and why they were interested in doing it, they want to get bigger and stronger and faster and do all of this. And we talked about what they really need. You know, at the age of 16 and 18, every possible hormone that you have for muscle growth and all of the things that are going to make you bigger and stronger and faster are already circulating in your blood. And there is a 50-year-old doctor like me that would give anything to put some of their blood into me.
True.
But
as long as they're healthy.
Yeah. As long as they're healthy. But, so we talked about, you have to be relatable or you'll never be able to get through to them. So I think the only way to be relatable is to tell them a story about something that is what they're after, I guess. And the story was, and I've told this so many times, and I'll try to keep it brief, but my son, my middle son, was a wrestler, and he was one of the top guys in the country at his weight, 195 pounds, and was recruited all over the place. And we went out to multiple places, but the last place was Air Force Academy. They offered him a spot at Air Force Academy to wrestle. And, you know, as a dad, I was like, God, this is great. This, your life is set. I mean, not everybody gets into these military academies. It's really difficult to do that. So he listened and he said, but I want to play football. I'm like, what? What? Are you kidding me? Like nobody, he wouldn't have started his junior year in high school if someone wouldn't have been hurt. And I said, you have no stars. You're a defensive lineman at 195 pounds. You can't do that. Yep. I'm going to do it. So, okay. That's at the start of COVID. So everything shuts down. This was in February of his junior year. Which is the very start of COVID, March, everything started shutting down. So we had this plan, we're going to go work out and we're going to get this program started. Well, the gyms weren't open. No gym. You couldn't go to the gym. You couldn't go to school. You couldn't do anything. So I went all over the place and got workout equipment, built a gym in the house or in the garage, and talked to some of my friends who were in the nutrition world, and we need to get this kid up to 250 pounds by August. So we put him on the same bones of this performance medicine program that we have developed now, and watched him, kind of marketed him on X with scales and pulling out his pockets and showing that there were no weights in there. Went from 195 to 210 to 215 to 230 to 240 to 250 over the course of several months. Proved me wrong. He did.
Nice.
And was great as a senior. Had, I think, 20 something Division I offers. Ended up at Tulane. Started at Tulane around 260 pounds. Kept on the same, you know, what we are doing for these kids. And what Parker would tell you is, yeah, they did the same program that you did in college. So got him up to 300, and he ended up transferring to Wisconsin for a year, played at Wisconsin, and now is with the Panthers. So told them that story, and they're like, wow, so we don't need peptides? I'm like, no, you do not. You don't need peptides. You don't need anything but structured nutrition and calories. And so I talked about what it would take. I talked to, you know, the parents are a huge part of the adolescent world. They can't afford anything. They don't, in general, don't cook their meals and don't buy the food. So part of our program, I told the mom, was I'm going to send you a grocery list on what you need to buy, and I don't think you're going to be happy about it. And she goes, oh, it's fine. Whatever you send is what we'll do. And then told the boys, we're not doing peptides, but we'll do these supplements plus what your mom has agreed to make as far as groceries and meals and meal prep and all of that. And so that was the end of the peptide conversation for the most part. And that was in April, 1st of April. The older one of the boys was 200 pounds at that time. And he has stayed compliant. He's one of our sponsored athletes now. And he just weighed in at his visit to Rice, where he committed to play football at 220. You know, I said, I told you, you didn't need peptides. And that's kind of the story of how this particular piece of our practice got started.
It's really powerful. I mean, you're talking weight, which is so important in football, because you need to be able to outweigh the guy who's trying to toss you around on the other side of the line and to be strong. But do you see things like strength and speed, and like what type of measurements are you doing to measure performance? Or what do you hear that coaches are noticing with these athletes when they change their diet, lifestyle, and supplement routine?
Well, explosiveness is the thing that is, you have the ability to check and test that now with different machines and things along those lines. And that's a super powerful measuring device about how are you going to be successful, especially the interior players. What is your explosiveness like? But the reality for, you know, what we're measuring and what translates and correlates is lean mass versus fat mass versus water weight. And you have to know that as a baseline. If you just have a scale and somebody stands on the scale and says, I'm 200 pounds, and then they come back in 2 months and they're 210. Well, what kind of weight is that? Is it fat? Have you been eating cookies and cake, or have you been doing what you're supposed to do? So a baseline biometric data that we do with the kids will be a 3D body scan. And we look at exactly how much lean muscle mass they have on their body, how much body fat that they have, and how much water weight they have. So we take that as a baseline and can tell them, we need to make sure that to gain this weight appropriately, that you are gaining lean muscle mass and nothing else. So we can do, they each have a Hume or access to a Hume body pod and are on the dashboard. And a Hume body pod is not like the 3D scanner we have, but it's a rough guide. And it's really, for the purposes of what we're doing, is great. I think with our sponsored athlete that we work with now, he keeps being concerned as he gains weight. He doesn't want to lose speed. So I've told him, I want you to keep me informed on how you're doing speed-wise, because he's gaining all of this lean mass. And he just called me the other day and said, I'm faster now than I was. It's like, well, that's your explosiveness piece. And that's going to translate just that, you know, a vertical jump, a 40-yard dash, your that kind of thing is explosiveness, and that's what they measure. So you are going to end up being a high school player playing your senior year, already committed to Division I. He's going to be a monster because of what he's done.
Well, that's awesome and impressive. I'm happy for them. I'm excited for them, and very cool for you to be helping athletes like this, because it changes their whole future.
For sure.
You know, changes their health, changes their opportunities. What are we talking about when you say nutrition? Because you said something, you told the mom you're not going to be happy with this grocery list. What made you say that? What was on the grocery list?
Let's talk about what a typical kid with their parents do. The parents are willing to invest whatever in their kid to get better, right? We were guilty of this early because we just were. It's just the easy thing to do. So your kid would go to school, get done with school, have a snack, go to practice, eat a snack, and then we would go and spend $200 on quarterback training per hour. And he would get this private quarterback training, and then that would finish. We were tired. We're saying, it's already 7 o'clock. Are you going to go home and make dinner? No, let's get a Chick-fil-A or let's whatever, fast food. So that's kind of been the typical ease. We're investing money and, again, asking kids to do stuff and be at a high level without the raw materials that they need. There's the grocery list talks about what you need in the morning. You know, the ham, how many eggs do you need? A snack is not just a snack. It's something substantial, a chicken breast plus a meal bar. Then at lunch, the school lunch is probably not enough. And in summer, for sure, it's not going to be great. And then when they get home, they have to have a meal prepped with certain things in it, rice and carbs. And so they're, you know, ready to burn that energy. And then dinner is more of the same, a steak and chicken. So, you know, our grocery bill with just one kid trying to get enough food in him to gain weight. Now, this is not just for the average people. These are certain, you know, this is somebody that wants to learn, but or wants to gain. Their grocery bills for their kids are going to triple, if not more. But the beauty of that is at least they know exactly what they need. There's no guessing. Let's try this and this. So they get, you know, from us a grocery list, so they know what the exact cost of that's going to be. And the latest iteration of what we have built is kind of cool. So when we give the parents the grocery list, there's three grocery stores listed in their area with all of the stuff that they need kind of priced out, so they can at least go get the cheapest version of what they need.
Yeah, it sounds like Costco is one of those.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yep. You're not going to Costco. You're making a huge, or Sam's or one of those, you're making a huge mistake.
Well, so it sounds like it's all Whole Foods.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then, I mean, you have the meal replacement bars, protein bars, and in there, that's where the supplements come in, is there's also the supplements. But, you know, the other thing with the parents in this piece, when it comes to the adolescents, the accountability piece with the parents. So this has to be a conversation that you have with not only the kids. Are the kids on board? If the kids aren't on board, it's only going to create a disaster at home if the kids aren't on board. So if the kids want to be on board, then the parents either are agreeable to do it or not agreeable to do it. And if they are agreeable to do it, it's a lot of work. It was a lot of work for me when I was doing it with Parker, because those shakes become old after a while. Their shakes are hard to get down. The amount of calories you need to put into your body to do what they want to do is uncomfortable. So the parents, you know, need to be accountable. And there are questions from the parents about, I've never done this before. I've never tried to hold my kid accountable for eating. And that is largely because the world we live in is so vain and everything is about, let's ration out. We don't need to eat this much. We'll just eat this little bit. We want to maintain, you know, a healthy appearance kind of a thing, which in a way is good. So it's a whole different ballgame when they have to start talking about forcing extra food into their kid to get them to get to the calorie count that they actually need.
I mean, you're right. You said in the beginning, most teenagers show up to practice and you say, what have you eaten today? And they say nothing, or like a bag of chips, or, you know. So I think it can be a really big change and really difficult. You mentioned supplements, and I know you said protein shakes and protein powders, like, and that you don't have an exact supplement stack, but I guess, what are some of the supplements that you would encourage a parent of any athlete to look into?
So first, it has to be NSF certified. So if something is NSF certified, you know that it's safe for them to take in high school and in college. College will only be able to use NSF certified supplements. So that is basically that there's no pieces in those supplements that, you know, nobody's throwing in a peptide or something that's going to be banned by the NCAA. Obviously, you're not going to get tested in high school, or at least most places aren't going to test in high school, but that's what you want to look for, because those are going to be your best possible brands. So, you know, the first thing and kind of the core thing that you need is a protein powder. And it doesn't, you can use whey protein, you can use isolate, casein. I mean, there's all sorts of different types of protein, but you want to get protein. And then it's not about the protein. When you look at, okay, well, you could put three scoops in a glass of milk and mix it up and drink that and get your full day's worth of protein and at one time. You don't want to do that either, because so much of that ends up just being wasted. There are certain things that are better at certain times. Protein spread throughout the day is important. So NSF protein, a good protein, a large amount, as large as you can get per kind of scoop, is the best. Then you have creatine. Probably the most common question I get is about creatine. Well, when should I take it? Before a workout, after a workout, in the morning, at bedtime? The key to creatine is just take it. You just have to take it. And it has to be every single day. You have to take it, because that stores energy. The phosphate piece of creatine ends up making more ATP. So you're able to recreate ATP quicker. Magnesium, we do a lot of supplement for magnesium, which kind of helps. That would be something as a naturopath that you would have suggested to help people sleep. And that's another thing. You know, when you talk about the importance of this overall performance piece is, you know, how do we help them get more sleep, restful sleep, true recovery sleep? You know, magnesium can help with that. So those are kind of, you know, omega-3 is in a lot of what we do. It's kind of a, you know, a good fatty supplement, and it helps with the recovery piece. So you don't want to take that when you haven't worked out, or, you know, hours before you work out. You want to take it around the time you work out or a little after you work out. So there's really a schedule to all of this stuff. And ultimately, in the end, it's getting them to do it. Any of it is going to be great. But I think what we have found is most successful with these kids is that we put them on a schedule that they can follow. We put them on a schedule where they can look and say, what time and exactly how much am I supposed to take at this time? And all of that's already built into what they've told us they do. So spring training, for instance, is a little bit different. Here's where when they work out, it's after school. In the summer, they may work out in the morning. They may work out at noon or the afternoon. So it kind of switches things up a little bit.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like protein, omegas, magnesium, creatine. Is there anything else in the list, like a multivitamin, like stuff that you think is important?
Well, I think, you know, at Fullscript, the reason probably that we're even on this podcast right now together is the lab component of what you guys do. So a huge part of what we try to look at is, you know, I want to be conscious of the parents are buying all of this stuff and these supplements. So if we can get a core adolescent sports performance panel of blood work done that does a lot of the very basic stuff, vitamin B12, vitamin D, ferritin, complete count, complete blood count, all of your electrolytes, you know, get magnesium, some of that stuff. I don't look at that in the same way that I would look at a 50-year-old's blood work. It's all about optimization for these kids. Yes, occasionally you can come across, and not in this particular program, I don't want to suggest that, but it's, again, this lost area for adolescents. You occasionally get you know, an elevated hemoglobin A1C or an off the chart lymphocytes or white blood cell count, and which says there may be signs of trouble where they're ordinarily not getting blood work done. And I think that's been the consensus around all of these 16, 17, 18 year old kids. None of them have had blood work in 10 years. So you find that. And then, you know, in the athletes, especially the linemen, will get insulin, hemoglobin A1C. If we notice a hemoglobin A1C of, say, 5.7 in a 17-year-old kid, that kind of puts them squarely in pre-diabetic range. Insulin resistance range may explain why they're a little bit overweight, and we can then have a different conversation that's outside of the performance realm. So some of it is performance related. Obviously, if they start having or showing evidence of iron deficiency or an MCV that's a little low, we want to figure out how to supplement that. You guys at Journeys do such a great, great job of helping us, the providers that actually use your program. What you have written up about each of the tests is so impactful to these people. Just even today, not this is outside of the performance world, but was on the call for an hour going over lab tests, and the patient is blown away. It's like, no one has ever talked to me about a normal lab before. And like, why did we check it? Well, here's why. It may be normal, but it's not optimal. You kind of look at those blood tests and put things together. Yes, you can help performance. Yes, you can. You make sure you're optimizing what this program is about. But at the same time, we're physicians that are, you know, trying to deal with making sure we're doing the right thing.
You mentioned testosterone, and this is a good time to bring this up. Do you have your younger athletes coming to you looking to optimize their testosterone? Is that something that they're asking you about? I would imagine it.
100%. 100% they are. And it's just so funny to me, because I love having that conversation, and I check it for their benefit. It's a, you know, a $9 test or whatever it is. It's very powerful, not because I would ever replace a 16-year-old's testosterone that wants to get stronger for football or basketball or wrestling or whatever, but to prove to them that they're a normal kid. And being able to talk about that with them can be powerful and can be dissuasive about, because you can find anything on the internet. You can find anything anywhere. So having the ability to show them a normal, optimized testosterone that any man my age would give anything to have, that's powerful. So yes, they do talk about it. They also talk about, you know, growth hormone and all of those things that are already sky high in their body.
Well, I think it's powerful when you can show someone the numbers and they see they're at the top of the chart already. It can help them understand, okay, that's not my problem.
That's like, right.
And I've also found, and I don't know if you found this, but when you put someone on a protocol that gets them healthy, that gets them sleeping and gets them enough nutrients, like their testosterone naturally will bump up, just as a byproduct of them living a healthier lifestyle and sleeping, because you make your testosterone while you sleep. So like, it's also powerful to show them, hey, just by taking these supplements and eating enough and maybe moving slightly differently, maybe choose some different exercises in the gym, like we actually were able to boost your testosterone naturally. Like, do you see any of that?
So the most powerful piece of all of this comes from asking them the question in front of their parents, why do you want a higher testosterone level? Why do you think that is going to help? And the answer is predictable with everyone. I want to be stronger. I want to play Division I football. I want to be a state champion wrestler. Whatever the answer is, they can always be redirected back to, why don't we first control the things that I know we can control, which is going to be appropriate diet. And even if they're not kind of formally in the program, we can go through some of our intake questions, which is, I want you to, if you're honest with me, I can help you. If you're not honest with me, I'm not going to be able to help you. And that typically will trigger them to be honest. And then we have some tricks in the way we can ask the questions. That's just being a seasoned practitioner of any sort. We know how to ask appropriate questions. And if you get them to admit that they eat a Pop-Tart in the morning and they have a bag of chips and a hamburger for lunch and nothing before practice, and they get Chick-fil-A as they are getting done with practice and go home and eat a bowl of cereal and go to bed. You don't need testosterone. Your body is just begging you to do the right thing with your body to allow the testosterone that you do have to truly take effect. And I think that's probably the most impactful discussion around testosterone, around peptides, around any of that kind of stuff, is just let them know that they're looking at the wrong spot, but they're looking for an easy way out, which, again, that's probably a whole different podcast about the psyche of where we are right now. Everything is kind of, you want to push an easy button and gain weight. You want to push an easy button and get stronger. You want to push an easy button and make more money. Whatever the case is, we have to battle that as physicians.
Well, I think it's really powerful that you, as a former athlete at a college level, and then as someone who's helped to raise young people who are also performing at a professional level in sports, that you're able to have these evidence-based conversations with them. But I think one of the things I see is, like, teenagers, they're on social media, but who are they listening to? It's the 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old men talking to them. And that's a very different person talking about performance than someone who's in a teenage body, who's got a testosterone of 1,100 on a normal day. That's not what's happening with the men who are on social media talking about performance as maybe like a bodybuilder or a weightlifter. They're a different type of person. Their testosterone is naturally lower. Their growth hormone is naturally lower. Like, they may benefit from support that a teenager is not going to need if they're giving their body what it needs. Like, they're optimal. They're capable of having optimal levels of all these hormones if they just give themselves the right ingredients, including sleep. And I don't think we're having that conversation enough. And I'm not sure that a lot of the folks who are sharing this information online are doing so with the awareness that the audience that they are speaking to is not just their peers, but it's going to be a lot of young people who may mistakenly think, you know, the thing that this 45-year-old guy is talking about is, like, so not meant for me at all.
Yeah, I mean, we see that. That's, your point is very well taken, because it's the absolute truth. And, you know, one of the things that you hear kind of these influencers say, and it's a hook that reels people in, I do this stack or that stack or this stack, and it worked for this reason. So immediately what comes to mind to these kids is, if I just do those three things, you mean I'm going to look like you? That's easy. I can do that. So that kind of, we, at least at my practice, I'm not saying it's good or bad. Just in our practice, we kind of avoid the stack piece, even though I understand what it means. And if you put it into the context of education around it, it's meaningful. But what these guys on social media that are trying to, you know, sell it on their TikTok shop or Instagram or whatever it is, they're getting sponsored by it, however that gets out there, social media wise, their goal is to make it sound easy, to make it sound like, I'm just going to buy this stack and tomorrow I'm going to look like you and have a six pack and big biceps and get all the girls or whatever. That's kind of what they put out there. And you're exactly right. I'm not buying that, because I've had enough life experience to know that that's just not how things work. But the person who hasn't had any real life experience is the one saying, well, if it'll work for that old guy, it'll definitely work for me. I mean, I think that's what is in their mind when it comes to, you know, buying this kind of stuff. And then you have kids are smart and can convince their parents of anything. Hey, I want to do this because I want to get better. Well, they're already putting in money for, you know, equipment and private lessons and travel and whatever else. So, okay, well, if you want that, we'll just get that too, without any context around it, is that's a problem.
Yeah. I'm glad they have you as a resource. So, I mean, for the parents that who are listening to this, because we have a lot of parents, it sounds like you are not prescribing peptides to these teenagers. It sounds like you have got a performance program built on nutrition and supplements that really, really works and gives great results. And you're someone who's getting asked about this a lot, and you've seen that it's possible to get phenomenal results with a natural protocol.
Yeah, it is. So first, you know, the whole peptide thing is really controversial, right? I mean, it's a controversial topic to begin with, because in theory right now, yes, the GLP-1s are peptides and you can prescribe them, and you can get them compounded, and that's kind of on the list of things that are okay. But there are so many things that the kids want that aren't FDA approved and are going through a research protocol right now, one being BPC-157, TP-500. They're kind of in this limbo. They got pulled back off of the banned list for the NCAA and other things. And then I think this month, on the 23rd or 24th of this month, the FDA may make a decision around, are they going to be available for consumption? Some of the healing properties of those peptides have been really, really powerful. And I'm not saying whether I believe them or don't believe them, because that would put me in a difficult situation as a physician. But I can tell you, I'm excited to see what the ruling ends up being. I think it's interesting that the last people to make a decision is kind of the government to decide whether this is good or not, but that's neither here nor there. You know, peptides for my adults, people our age, we have a company that we work with that is truly in an IRB, Investigational Review Board. We've signed on with them. Our patients can become part of the actual research process. That's how we feel right now. We feel safe with this particular company prescribing peptides. I know that there are other practices out there that get their supply from the same places that these kids find on the internet. We're certainly not that way. And I'm not trying to sell that as a big part of our practice, because it's just really not a big part of our practice right now. It's certainly something that's available if people want it. But they also have a very lengthy conversation with me about what being in the research study means, what are your responsibilities. You have to kind of sign a bunch of paperwork to get involved in it. But I had one of my former college teammates was interested in a certain peptide here within the last 12 weeks. I said, the only way I'm going to do it is if you send me kind of before and after pictures and you get involved in the research. And he did it. And he sent me the pictures, and it's amazing what he accomplished with being on 12 weeks of this peptide. But I said, I know you didn't just use this peptide. I said, what else did you do? And he's exactly my age. We, again, were in the same class in college. So, well, I became strict on my diet. I only ate this, and I worked out a lot harder. Like, so you're going to put this on the peptide. You know how much money you spent on that peptide. And you also changed the two things that probably matter most: how you worked out, how hard you worked out, how frequently you worked out, all of that, and your clean eating, but you're going to give the peptide all the credit. Okay. That's fine. I'm not anti-peptide. I'm certainly not going to be someone that's going to come on here and sing its praises yet.
I think it's a good stance for a practitioner to have at this stage in time, is to do a really good informed consent, be really educated on it, because our patients are looking stuff up online. They're going to educate themselves if they don't have somebody steady to help them navigate through. And I love that you bring it back to the foundations, because anything you put in your body, whether it's hormones, like it's going to have to be metabolized. It's going to have to be incorporated. If you're doing that on a solid foundation of a healthy body that's eating healthy food, drinking enough water, sleeping enough, like you're just going to get a better experience with any medication or peptide that you introduce into your system. So I love your approach. I think it's very practical. I'm glad you're the one talking to these teenage athletes. Let's talk about what's next for you. We're talking about this program growing. you're someone who's on the leading edge in a lot of ways. Like, what's next for you as we look at the next couple years for your practice, for you personally? What are you most excited about?
Being done with emergency medicine.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That is, I think, to get our practice to where it needs to be. Both my partner and I, our exit strategy is your time frame exactly. It's 2 years, we'll be done with the emergency medicine piece. I think I'll always love emergency medicine. I think it's part of my identity. It's what I've been really, really good at professionally for a long time. But the reality is it's a young man's game. There's a lot of running around and a lot of stress that I've just determined at this point in my life that I probably don't need. People will also ask, well, when are you going to retire? And the answer is, honestly, I don't ever want to retire. I love this. I love what I'm doing. I love coming up with new ideas and new verticals off of what we've created here. So I think there's always going to be something that we're going to figure out. I love outside of this piece, I love taking care of people that are healthy, that want to stay healthy and get healthier. I've spent 2.5 decades listening to every reason under the sun why people are unhealthy. And I want to learn from people that are healthy and why they want to stay healthy. And then how can we help them do exactly that? And that's where, you know, for us, Journeys has been a huge part of that. I think outside of just being a normal guy, I guess, is part of what makes us successful. My partner's the same way. It's being able to talk through those lab panels with Journeys, and what they see inside of that is phenomenal. The cadence that we put them back on, they get the lab testing appointment again, and they just doing things like that that they've never had anybody else do for them in the past, I think is great. Yeah, as I say, what you guys have already done since, I think we got started on it in February of this year, adding the Aura ring and some of the wearable stuff and where that goes from here, I think is exciting stuff. So looking forward to continue that relationship and kind of try to be on the cutting edge about that with you.
I can't thank you enough for everything you're doing for our teenage athletes and for spending so much time with us today. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with before we close out?
Well, listen, this is, again, I think the most important part of this particular podcast for me is the adolescent kids are underserved. There's not a lot of interest because generally they're healthy. Generally, the vast majority of those kids are healthy, but they can be better. They can be better educated about their health and how to stay healthy, how to stay away from drugs, how to stay away from all of the things that tend to creep up on kids as they have a little bit more access to things. And that's what we're trying to do is step into that realm where, you know, nutrition and athletes is just what I'm interested in and what our practice is interested in. And there's a whole different group of those kids that need to be served as well. So hopefully more of that will come. But that's kind of my stance on where we are. I have loved being able to talk about this. It's really the first time that we've widely, for sure, shared what we're up to and why we're excited about it.
I would love that. Well, tell folks where they can find you and stay up to date with what you're doing.
Practice is First Call DPC. It's First and Call spelled out, DPC.com. But we also have firstcallperformance.com.
I think you'll be getting some more calls after this podcast. I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us today, and we'll have to have you back soon.
I would love it. I appreciate you so much. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We're so glad you're here. Before you go, we'd love your help spreading this message of whole person care. Our goal is to bring this education to more practitioners for free, and you can make a huge difference. If you liked today's episode, leave us a 5-star review. We read every single one. Drop a comment and let us know what resonated with you, or share this episode with a friend or colleague who might enjoy it. One important note. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the hosts and the guests, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of Fullscript or any affiliated organizations. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and it's not intended to be medical advice. For your safety, always check with your healthcare provider before making any changes to your healthcare routine. We'll catch you next time on the Root Cause Medicine Podcast.